Thousands of people marched across Boston yesterday, peacefully protesting the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. WBUR covered the event live as the organized protests of the day devolved into violent skirmishes at night.
Black Lives Matter!
Black Lives Matter!
It's inspiring because it lets me know that other people care, even if it doesn't affect them directly. That this we don't personally know George Floyd. But I do know that I knew other people that have passed away because of police violence.
And what motivated me to come out here was my daughter. My daughter's half black. And it worries me ever since I saw the news of what happened. It worries me, her leaving the house, that this is something that could happen to her or any of us.
Several hundred demonstrators are marching up to the Capitol building from Boston Common. Overhead, a helicopter just passed by.
Risking privilege that you have. That's what everyone needs to do in order for there to be change.
They're here. They want to show their solidarity and support. You know, everybody's well behaved.
Mm-hmm. All right. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman, who is at the State House covering a demonstration in Boston tonight over police brutality and racism. Yes.
Deb, I want to tell you just one thing. Somebody just threw something over the fence at the State House.
Okay. And threw what, Bruce?
It looks like a can or something just over the fence towards the police. Never reached them.
Okay. Adrian, this was largely peaceful for hours. Do we know at what point or what may have caused this to change?
That is pretty hard for me to... Oh, hold on. Okay, so now I just turned around and there's maybe about a dozen police officers walking down the street with batons. And they are sort of hustling with several people.
This is bad. And this is real bad. And this can get even worse. That's the bad thing about it. This is just scratching the surface.
To recap what happened last night and what we've learned since is one of the voices you heard in that sound, WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker. She anchored our live coverage last night. Welcome, Deb.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Deb, there were multiple demonstrations throughout Greater Boston. The biggest one was the march from Dudley Square to the State House. Can you tell us about that? It was mostly peaceful, wasn't it?
Right, it was. And it was the third march in Boston yesterday over the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. This one started at about 6:30 p.m. There were tens of thousands of people. They all seemed to be marching peacefully until shortly after 9 p.m. You heard that clip of WBUR's Bruce Gellerman, who was at the State House. And that's when we started hearing first reports of just confrontations at first. He, as Bruce had said, someone threw something over the fence at officers. He had been reporting all night a relatively small police presence. He described police officers as reacting passively when some of the demonstrators were yelling and things like that. But then shortly after nine, after whatever was thrown at the officers standing behind the fence at the State House, suddenly Bruce said there were dozens of officers. Police cars were speeding down Beacon Street. So you could surmise, anyway, that as that protest was wrapping up at the State House, different groups of demonstrators dispersed and went in different directions. And then for whatever reason, we don't know why yet, things quickly escalated. Our reporters started telling us then about violence and vandalism, fires, lootings, tear gas, rubber bullets. It was basically chaos.
Yeah, and then Marty Walsh, Boston mayor today, said the police had to be activated when it got violent last night. What do we know about what happened?
Well, let's listen to a little bit of how Mayor Walsh described it during a press conference today. Here he is.
The question is, did this get bigger than anyone anticipated would? Absolutely. No question about it. And generally, when you have, in my experience as a mayor, when you have marches, there's always some agitators in the crowd. And it's usually a handful. And last night was more than a handful.
So that was basically his messaging to Ziana. He was saying throughout the day there were these peaceful protests. It was only a few people or agitators who were just focused on causing problems. And that's what they did last night, and things escalated.
And are we still really confused, Deb, about why things devolved? What do we and don't we know?
Well, we heard from demonstrators, many demonstrators, and they're accusing police officers of being unnecessarily aggressive, of goading some of the protesters. Police say they had to respond to mayhem. Boston Police Commissioner William Gross today said 8 officers were taken to the hospital. He said dozens of other officers were hurt in the field and injured by some of the demonstrators. We also have a report that Suffolk DA Rollins said at one point police officers were fired on. We are still working to get information about that, but this is what Commissioner Gross said about the police department today.
The Boston Police Department, we pride ourselves in working with the community. We learned the lessons from the past, and we learned lessons from tragedies that are going on today. And again, we applaud everyone that protested peacefully, but unfortunately, others came hell-bent on destroying our city, our great city, our destination city, and we, along with others, there were people from the community as well that were like, no, you cannot destroy our city.
And Commissioner Gross also said he was proud of the way that Boston police and others handled the demonstrations last night.
So officials both yesterday and today have said that outsiders caused a lot of the trouble last night. Deb, is that true?
Well, Commissioner Gross said he wanted to dispel negative stereotypes, so he was going to give some numbers. And he said that he wanted to dispel the stereotype that people from Boston were responsible for the unrest. So this is what he said at the press conference today. He said there were a total of 53 arrests, 27 of them were people from Boston, 24 people outside of Boston, 2 people from out of state, and a summons was issued to someone from out of state.
So you followed it as it was unfolding last night. You're reporting on it today. What are the biggest outstanding questions that you have about what happened last night?
I think the question that probably most of us have, what exactly prompted that larger police presence, the sudden use of officers who were on standby, then calling in other law enforcement agencies, calling in the state police, calling in the National Guard? I think I'd like to know what exactly was it that started that. And also I'd like to know from officials about how they're going to handle future demonstrations. More are planned this week.
And that is WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker. Deb, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So for more, we'd like to turn now to Boston City Councilor Julia Mejia. Councilor Mejia, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me.
Glad to have you. And I want to start by asking you, how are you? What is going through your mind today?
You know, oh, wow. Everything is going through my mind today. I am thinking about those young people who peacefully marched from Dudley Nubian Square to the State House, many of which were doing it for the first time in solidarity and in support of Black lives and making sure that their voices were heard as young people. And my heart is heavy now. Knowing that so many of them were met with, once they got to the State House and all, things kind of went crazy. A lot of young people feeling, afraid disappointed with the reaction and all just the mayhem that broke loose. My heart is heavy.
Councilor Mejia, I want to stop you there just because I want to ask a clarifying question on something you said. You said when they got to the State House, they were met with, and I think you were implying this chaos that later ensued. My understanding was that even at the State House, that really for quite a long time, the protests were peaceful. And it wasn't until they really began to break up that we saw the more violent events begin to ensue.
That's exactly what, like after the march and after they spent, when I talk about after the State House, because that's what I'm associating the end with, you know, that's where the end of the march, that's where they all convened. And yes, you're right about clarifying me. It's really more around when that was over and the crowds were dispersing, just the end of it all just really kind of got out of hand.
So we've had quite a bit of peaceful protesting in the last few days, and all day yesterday was peaceful, as we've both said. Why do you think we had this turn last night into a clash that ended with more than 50 arrests?
Why do I think? I believe that there might have been some conflicting or opposite, I think there were several groups out there organizing. I'm not sure if everyone had the right intention in that space. I think that, the protest that was led by the young people from the city of Boston, young Black and brown young people who worked really hard to show solidarity and to march in peace. I think there were some other groups who were not part of our city who came here with another agenda. And I think that, these two different opposing views, it's like Malcolm and MLK, everybody has a different strategy or a tactic of how they see change coming. And, I think that the intentions of the young people were pure. And then there were other folks who had a very different political agenda, and that was to cause chaos.
According to the commissioner, about half of the arrests made were people from the city of Boston. And to your point, half were not. But what do you make of the fact that half were from in the city? Just mm-hmm. about.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all in what, I can't speak to every single incident of folks who were arrested. So I don't know what the interactions were. I think when I think about the bigger picture, I really do think whether or not our officers are well-trained and prepared around de-escalation, right? And I think when emotions are running high on both sides, I think that, it's how we talk people off of the ledge, if you will. And I'm just curious about what that looks like. And I'm wondering, what can we do differently as we move forward in the city? And just in general, there's so much unrest everywhere.
Councillor Mejia, one of the things that we learned from you last night was about young people who were stranded at the protest site. BPD was telling people to go home. The T had already shut down Park Street and downtown crossing stations. You yourself went on two quote-unquote rescue missions to help stranded young people get home safely. Can you tell us about that? How did that happen? And any idea why the T closed the stops down there?
Yeah, so that was I was really taken back by that. I mean, I did go to shadow the young people when they were walking towards Tremont Street from Dudley up. I made it as far as the south end towards Back Bay, but I didn't go all the way into the State House. But I was really surprised to hear, and I saw actually one of the young people that was participating in the march going on her Facebook Live saying that something went on, that she had lost the group of people that she was there with, that she was in some alleyway and she was afraid. She heard something that sounded like a bomb go off, and she was in an alley and she was scared and she didn't know how to get out, that there was no way out, that there was no way for her to get on the train. It was just crazy, just mayhem happening. And so I saw her sharing what was happening in real time, and I asked if she wanted me to come pick her up. I know the young woman, she and her sister. I said, just tell me where you are, I'll go pick you up. And I didn't know what I was going to be driving into because everyone was telling me that downtown was just crazy. So I just decided to, I met her on 120 Milk Street to be exact. I picked her up there, and her father had also arrived at the scene at the same time, and she was shook. And then I went back to Dorchester, and on my way back to Dorchester, heard from some other young people who were stranded, who were going from train station to train station trying to get home, and they couldn't. So I said, I'll go pick you up, and I drove back to downtown. I told them to meet me at 120 Milk Street and pick them up and drop them off at home too. I felt like I understand the concept. If you are big enough to get there, you should know. You should be big enough to get home, but if you don't have a plan in place to help you to properly prepare in the event that the whole train station shuts down, then you're putting a lot of people at risk, and then you're asking people to leave, but then you're not giving them a way out is quite dangerous.
In the limited time we have with you, there are a couple of other questions I do want to get to. You also tweeted that you are looking into the Boston Police Department's use of body cameras, cultural competency, and overtime. I know this all just happened last night, but have you learned anything today on any of those fronts?
No, not as of yet, but that I talked about that during my public hearings. Because, you know, right now we're in budget season, and I am really looking to see how we're utilizing our dollars and making sure that our police are properly trained and prepared. And I also am wondering whether or not we could be investing some of our funds in some of the cultural competency pieces, really looking at how we provide more support services to communities that need it, and really reevaluate the whole system.
Counselor, do you feel the BPD acted appropriately last night?
So I can't really speak to that, to be honest with you, because I have to be honest, what I saw from Nubian Square to as far as Back Bay, I didn't even really reckon, I didn't even feel the police presence, right? They weren't even visible to me. It just felt like a peaceful march, and young people looked like they were really supported. I didn't get to the State House, and I didn't get to see any of that. But some of the images that I saw on TV, it was heartbreaking. So I can't speak to the appropriateness of what happened there, but what I saw earlier on, but what I heard afterwards does have me concerned, because I heard that there were some police officer cars that were rolling over protesters. I heard that it felt like some things were being incited. So these are things that have been reported to me, and I am very troubled by those reports.
We know that a lot of property was damaged last night, and that at least 7 officers were hospitalized in the fallout. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, that is very unfortunate. You know, I think for me, it's really important for everyone in the city to recognize is that we're not going to get anywhere if we're always in constant conflict with one another and screaming at each other. And this is not the time for us to point fingers and tear others down. I do believe this is it's presenting this to be an opportunity to really understand that it's going to take all of us to really break down the systemic racism that we have neglected to dismantle here in the city of Boston. And I think that I feel for the families of those police officers. I feel for the businesses that have been destroyed, and I feel for the lives of people who don't feel safe in this community. All of these people.
Counselor.
This morning.
Counselor, you were elected as part of a sea change. You are now part of the most diverse city council in Boston's history. What would you like to see as a councilwoman from Mayor Walsh and Commissioner Gross moving forward on this?
Yeah, you know, and I won by one vote, right? So I know that I have a lot to learn and a lot to prove, but I also know that I represent 22 neighborhoods. And I think that what we need to do is work in collaboration across our differences. I expect that both the commissioner and the mayor will listen to the voices of the people who are hurting across the entire city. I expect that we're gonna be working in collaboration to move the city forward. And you know, I really hope that the protesters and the young people that were out here trying to make their voices heard, feel heard and supported.
That's Boston City Councilor Julia Mejia. Councilor Mejia, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're continuing to talk about the weekend's protests in Boston in response to the death of George Floyd in Minnesota at the hands of police officers. We'll hear from Governor Charlie Baker as he addresses the Commonwealth in a few minutes. But first, we turn to Reverend Willie Bodrick II, associate pastor at 12th Baptist Church. Reverend Bodrick attended yesterday's protest. It's good to talk to you, Reverend Bodrick. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, and good to be here with you.
How are you? How are you feeling today? How are you thinking about things?
It's been a difficult week, to be very honest with you. Just really processing all that has happened and the repetitive nature of being here again, responding to another incident of unarmed black man, black body being killed by the police. And here we see another outcry. And so it's been hard to process. We've been feeling a lot of frustration and pain throughout our community. And, you know, for many of us, it's just enough is enough. And we're trying to both uphold our righteous indignation, but make sure that we're continually to keep a sense of consciousness that will give us enough to keep pushing through. And I want to just continue to push through. I mean, me and my wife were celebrating our wedding anniversary, and my son's 10 months old this week, and she just broke out in tears. And it just really spoke to the fact that she's struggling. She told me, I'm worried about you two and your lives. And so there's a fear, there's an anxiety, but we're trying to continue to push through so that we can change the system of racism and the system of policing that brings us to this instance time and time again.
Well, first, happy anniversary to you.
Thank you very much.
And second, you're welcome. Well, what was it like to be at the protest yesterday? And what was your aspiration for the day as you set out?
So I just have to say, the day started with me preaching. I woke up that morning to hopefully give an inspiring, encouraging, but truth to power message to the 12th Baptist congregation and to the many people in our community who's been listening in online due to COVID. But the goal was to continue to speak truth to power and to be out there to peacefully protest. It was a beautiful experience to see young people step up in our community and lead. It was a great experience being in solidarity with people of all races, all faith traditions, all creeds, coming out to be in solidarity around the issue that is at hand, that there's police misconduct, police brutality, and that unarmed black lives are vulnerable in this country. For the most part, it was great. It reminded me of my time when I was protesting in Ferguson, when Michael Brown was killed. It reminded me of my time in New York protesting alongside my wife and other family, my brothers, when Eric Garner was killed. And for the most part, it was a peaceful protest. I think there was a spirit of, we want to see change. The cries of I can't breathe and Black Lives Matter was in the air. And I thought it was a protest that was speaking to the cries of the people.
What do you think happened last night? How did things escalate and why do you think?
Well, Tiziana, we look across the country. Boston is not an isolated incident. And people, there are those who don't know what to do with their anger and their pain. And so there is some misplaced anger. And we don't condone the looting or destruction of buildings. It's nothing anyone teaches. But I have to be honest and say, I understand the pain. I understand the hurt. I understand trying to process what to do. I understand how when Colin Kaepernick got on a knee and peacefully protested, no one listened. And people called him unpatriotic and un-American. And so people are just struggling to figure it out. And then there are those who come and in any protest and riot, come with other agendas. And that wasn't what it was about. It was about focusing on the issues, getting our voices heard, and ensuring that our city, along with other cities across the country, that America actually addresses its original sins of racism and the fact that it's permeated every aspect of our society, including our policing in this country, and that we need to take action and do something about it. And I don't want the damage or the things that devolved into that situation to dilute the problem or to distract us from the problems that are at hand and the purpose for why we were there peacefully protesting.
So how does one do that? How does one keep what happened last night from distracting from the challenges that there was an expression of righteous anger against in the daytime protests yesterday?
Yeah, I think Dr. King said that riots are the language of the unheard. And so we must understand that people have gone unheard for a long time. And I say that this has become somewhat of American ritual. To come back to this instance over and over again It's almost ritual for us. And I think people are tired of it. I think the goal here is to actually recognize that the source of the problem and the source of the problem is what we should be considering, not the symptoms, and recognizing that these things would not happen if justice were served immediately. If we have not continually seen cops get arrested and get off, or police officers or state actors get, do acts of misconduct and brutality and end up in another job in another police department. And so I think what we're going to have to do is really hold up a mirror to ourselves in this country and really ask ourselves, is it the property and the damage that we're worried about, or is it the problem that we have a systemic racism issue, we have a white supremacy issue, that we have a policing problem in this country, and that we need to do something about it? And so I'm praying that that we can keep focus here and not allow some of the bad actors that were out there to distract us from the fact that we have a problem that continues to cause these types of outcries. And what we're seeing is that we're not just seeing it here, it's all across the country. We're seeing it across the globe, in London and in other countries across the world, in solidarity, because people acknowledge that the real problem is a lack of value of humanity of Black life in this country.
Reverend Willie Bodrick, I'm going to have to cut away in about 20 seconds for the governor. One last thought. What's the immediate next step you want to see?
I want to see us not just have statements of solidarity from our leaders, but actions of substance that will deconstruct the practices that profile Black bodies. And I want us to be reminded that peace is the resolve of justice, not the forcing of civility in the face of injustice. And so I believe that God is a God of peace because God is a God of justice. And if we're going to get past this, we're going to have to repent as a nation to our original sins.
I'm going to have to cut you off there. I apologize. That's Reverend Willie Bodrick II. Thank you so much. I'm Tiziana Deering. You're listening to Radio Boston.